Today on CityCast Pittsburgh, County Executive Sarah Inamorato just marked 100 days in office, and she released a massive 91-point plan for the county in the coming years. Host Megan Harris sat down with Inamorato in her office downtown to talk about everything from affordable housing to climate action, plus the lawsuit she's facing from the school district over property reassessments. It's Monday, April 22nd. I'm Mallory Falk, and here's what Pittsburgh's talking about.
So you've been in office just over 100 days now, and you've released the results of a big survey that you were working on for 5 months, asking county residents to share their top priorities for your office. What were some of your big takeaways from that?
Well, my first takeaway from the survey was the fact that when we were working with our consultants before I was sworn in, you know, these folks had worked nationally with elected leaders in major metropolitan areas, places like New York and Oakland and Houston.
And places much bigger than Pittsburgh,
yes,
Pennsylvania.
Yes, and Allegheny County of 1.23 million people. And they were like, you know what? If we do really, really good in these spaces, we typically got around 10,000 responses. So like 10,000 is an aggressive number. And I was like, well, let's go for it. Let's do it. We have a great team. I think that should be where we aim. And, you know, when all was said and done, when we closed the survey at the end of February, we had 19,000 responses from the community. So when I think about the thing that has surprised me most and given me the most hope is that how many people took the time to share what their priorities are and really gave us a glimpse into what they want to see out of county government and what issues they want us to tackle. So, you know, that's my favorite part of the plan, that it was informed by so many people across all 130 municipalities. We had it translated into 9 different languages. Each one was used at least once. And we had folks at the jail fill it out. We had folks who are using our shelter system fill it out. We had people in the Canes system fill it out. So, you know, we had really had an intentional and broad outreach with the survey.
Yeah. And so this plan, as part of the conclusion of the survey, you dropped a 91-point plan.
Yes.
Are you a to-do list person? Does it just help you to like put it all out there and like figure out like, okay, this is all the things we could do?
Yes. Reminders is my favorite app on my phone. So I'm constantly making lists. And I think, you know, in politics, you have to speak in flowery language. You have to talk about vision. You have to talk about where you're taking people. And, you know,
the one word that I saw the most in this whole plan was the word explore. We're going to explore this thing.
Yeah.
We're not promising we'll do it. We're going to explore it. Maybe we'll do it.
Yeah. But when you're talking about like when you're campaigning, right, the mission statement that we still have in this office is building an Allegheny County for all. And that's going to catch a lot of people because they're going to be like, yeah, I want that. I want to build a place where we all belong, where we feel welcome and safe and connected and we can all thrive. But for a lot of people too, they're like, what does that actually mean? And so we had to move from talking about the vision and the flowery language to real action. What does it look like when we take that mission and the vision and value that we set out in the campaign and the beginning of our administration and put them into action? And so that's what this plan is. Those 91 points are the manifestation of this work and saying, here's what building a county for all looks like. It looks like we're going to deploy alternative response in our municipality. So when you call 911 in your mental health crisis, there's going to be a behavioral health specialist who comes out and helps connect you with tools and resources that you need. It means that, you know, with vibrant democracy, that we are going to, you know, do what we're already doing, which is have more ballot return sites. This is talking about what we're going to do, how we're walking the talk.
Well, so those are a couple top priorities. Are there any short-term ideas that feel the most achievable for you? Like, you can really wrap your head around them and you've got like the team in place to like do some stuff really fast.
Yeah, absolutely. So with the 91 points, we broken them down by the 9 issue areas that we categorized everything into, but we also broke it down by timeline. So we have things that are, we can do in the near term, midterm, longer term.
And there's a bunch of different categories like housing, public safety, all kinds of stuff.
Absolutely. And you know, some things that I'm really excited about. So at the beginning of June, we are going to be launching our Half Fare program. That's a partnership between Pittsburgh Regional Transit and our Department of Human Services. And that means everyone who is a SNAP recipient between the ages of 18 and 65, they will be able to register and receive half fare when they're using the bus. And
so literally half price, whatever their fare would be from A to B to C.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And so that has, you know, this was based off a pilot that started about a year ago. And so, you know, we're solidifying that into a concrete program and making sure that, you know, we can get started on that and hopefully move eventually towards some sort of free fare program for our neediest public transit users. What are some other ones? I mean, we've done the ballot return sites, which is really exciting. And I think we're going to see how many people utilize that during this primary election and talk about how we expand that in the general.
I love that you're checking your phone.
I'm like, what else are we doing?
You have your own website pulled up.
Yes.
Well, how about transitional housing? We'll start there. You've talked a lot about our needs for our unhoused population here in Allegheny County. There's a ton of long-term goals in there for more affordable housing, like buying units where maybe affordable housing requirements are set to expire and then turn them into permanent affordable housing. But yeah, in terms of like the shortest term goals, is there anything that you're feeling like is, you know, we could achieve this in the next 3 months, next 6 months, next 12?
Yeah, so we are going to work aggressively with our Department of Human Services in partnership with Department of Economic Development and our housing authorities and our philanthropic community and our nonprofit partners and I would say mission-driven developers to identify properties that are for sale now, so either former nursing homes or hotels that we can purchase and turn around and get them online for people who are exiting homelessness. And we feel like we have strong commitments. We have identified key properties and, you know, we have the coalition ready to move. And, you know, unlike building new affordable housing where you have to, which takes a lot of time.
There could be a big run up to that.
Yes. And, you know, you have to build from the ground up. These are saying we have existing infrastructure. How do we retrofit these buildings so that they can accommodate people in a more dignified, independent living situation? Because, you know, we've seen over the last 2 years, a 60% rise in people who are utilizing our shelter system and folks who are unsheltered outdoors. And people are staying in our shelter systems longer than they have in the past. And most of these folks are just people who are looking for an affordable place to live. And what we know is that if we just provide them with subsidized, affordable rents, then they will be able to exit our shelter system and have a more stable living situation.
How do you feel about tiny homes?
How do I feel about tiny homes
as a solution for either temporary or longer term housing for folks that are experiencing homelessness?
You know, I think that there's a place for modular housing. So, you know, the City of Bridges Community Land Trust, when they were building their first homes in Lawrenceville, they used like prefab homes because you can actually crane them in and they fit within the character of the neighborhood and made for cheaper developments that were still high quality. But, you know, when we're talking about tiny homes, I think we have to think about like, where would they be? How would you make sure there was all the sanitation infrastructure that you need? How would you get electricity there?
That's always been a big part of like the conversation around those, is like making sure that there's support services and staff wherever you do. I can see how maybe a nursing home, something like that, has at least the infrastructure physically in the building.
Yeah. And you can bring, what you can do is you can bring a whole community, because what we know from talking to people who are living outdoors is that many of them don't feel safe in a congregate setting. So they're not interested in a shelter bed because maybe their stuff was stolen. Maybe they got in an altercation. Maybe there's just some kind of trauma associated with that.
Or there's just a high barrier to entering that shelter, which is true of a lot of our shelters in Pittsburgh.
Yes, it absolutely can be the case for some of our shelter providers. But they would take housing, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and people build communities outdoors. And so instead of taking one person from that community, can we take a group of people, you know, maybe the whole community, and move them towards, you know, someplace that's indoors, that's safer, that provides more stability, but maintains that connectedness and that social capital that was built.
Yeah. Smithfield United Church of Christ, of course, was not open this past winter. Do you imagine there could be a path forward possibly to use them in the future?
I think that we are looking at, we stood up a very successful Code Blue system. We were actually just with folks from the city and our nonprofit partners and Department of Human Services a few days ago, kind of celebrating the work that folks did during that time. And I think what I heard in that room was a lot of people who were really skeptical about the system. They, you know, these are the experts, they do the work each and every day, but were pleasantly surprised how everything worked out and how people used the system, how they felt safe, how they felt welcomed, how we were able to connect them with resources and services while they were there. And, you know, I spent I went to Second Avenue Commons a few times, and I went on a Code Blue night and rode the bus up to Ammon Center up in the Hill District. And, you know, just seeing how it all operates was pretty incredible. So, you know we will always need an emergency shelter system, but ultimately people are looking for housing. And so we need to create more units so that people can move into housing and not just have a cot on a gym floor.
Yeah. Sounds like a maybe not right now. Is that fair?
I think we have to look, we'll be looking at, you know, how many units can we put online and move people out of the shelter system and into, you know, more stable housing, and then, you know, reevaluate what do we need and how do we make sure we're meeting those needs.
Hey, Pittsburgh. I want to tell you about a real Steel Town hero. Mary Cardwell Dawson was just the coolest. Not only was she the proprietess of that gorgeous Victorian mansion on Apple Street in Homewood, but inside it, she presided over the National Negro Opera Company. She founded guilds for other Black singers all over the nation, and she was a mentor for fellow opera singers from here to Washington, D.C. And lucky for you, our modern Pittsburgh opera has a show celebrating her legacy. Get your tickets now for The Passion of Mary Cardwell Dawson. It's at the Byam Theater through May 5th. And don't be nervous if you're new to opera. The show is in English, it's just over an hour, and features a little dialogue for folks to follow along. Tickets start at just $15, and there are all kinds of discounts and special offers for students, teachers, seniors, and veterans. Get your tickets now in our show notes for the Pittsburgh Opera. That's at pittsburghopera.org.
Last time we talked, you were in a bit of a hiring blitz. I imagine some of that is still continuing. Mm-hmm. One in particular, a director of climate resilience. And of course, you've got an action plan related to that. With all of the flooding lately, what do you hope your administration can accomplish in terms of some of those questions around resilience in our community?
Absolutely. So we are still looking for a director of climate resiliency and green jobs. We've made an offer to a director of sustainability, but we're waiting to hear back to see if they accept our offer. We really hope they do, because we have a lot of work to do in this space. You know, the first thing that we'll be doing is moving forward with the county's first ever climate action plan. And that's going to be great because it's going to give us an opportunity to look at all the municipalities and see like, what municipality has already made a climate action plan?
Because there are a few.
Yeah, because the DEP runs a program for municipalities. So a lot of folks in our region have gone through that. Connect, which is an organization that includes the city and the like kind of the first tier municipalities that touch the city and some other ones around the county. They've gone through a climate action plan. So this will really be, we have a lot of foundation to build on, whether that's municipal or kind of more partial county-wide plans that have been done.
But doing it on a county level with so many people and such a weird collection of topography to deal with seems more challenging, maybe?
I think it will definitely be challenging, but it's something that we must do because when we talk about climate change and how it manifests itself in southwestern PA, it means there's going to be more intense rainfall. And we have a type of soil that just doesn't collect that rainwater well. So it leads to, you know, more flooding, more landslides, and our aging infrastructure. It's, you know, climate change is always has a multiplier effect on it. So we have aging infrastructure, so it puts more pressure on those systems. And so when we talk about addressing climate change, we can't look at the boundary of a municipality and say, this is how we're going to solve it. This is how we're going to solve stormwater, because what happens upstream is always going to impact the communities downstream. So we need to take this countywide approach so that we can start pointing out areas where we can do cross-municipal projects that are going to positively impact the quality of life of people who live there, but also the people who live downstream of that area.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard, you know, anecdotally folks talk about places like Pittsburgh could potentially someday be a landing pad for people fleeing climate problems and other more extreme climates. But of course, Pittsburgh and Allegheny County have not been growing in a very long time. Do you think we can absorb and be kind of that friendly space for future folks who may need to come here because they cannot reasonably live in places like El Paso, for example? I'm staring at producer Mallory Falk, who fled there too.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely spot on. So yeah, while we have our challenges that result because of climate change, we also have a lot going for our region, and we have a lot of fresh water. Our climate is fairly temperate. We are very good at growing food here, and we are one of the most climate resilient areas in America. So,
which, like, who saw that coming?
I know, right? We have to clean up our air, and you know that's a county problem, and we're hiring a director of health, and we're going to work on that issue head on. But you know, while we work on that, we can also start marketing ourselves as a climate resilient space to these areas that are consistently becoming unlivable for human beings. And we've seen that other, you know, areas have started to do that in Michigan and Ohio, who are also, you know, house some of these climate resilient areas. They've started to like promote themselves as like, hey, climate refugees, please come here. And we should be doing the same. Like, please move here. Please move your business here. Move your family here. We have space where we are welcoming. We want more people to be here. We want you to bring your whole selves, your experience, your culture, and embed it here in our region.
Well, I've seen, you know, in your action plan, there's some language here about supporting local green businesses. Is there a particular type of business that you think of when you hear green businesses?
So I actually got to tour one the other day that I was actually familiar with because of a past life when I was working in nonprofit land, which is Optimist Technologies. And I'm really kind of taken aback about how they've grown over the last decade or so. And they help, they retrofit large scale industrial vehicles, like think about your dump trucks, your garbage trucks, things that are hard to electrify, with biodiesel tanks. And you know, they've signed contracts with Washington, D.C. and work with their city government. They're in places like Ohio. They just signed a big, you know, they're working with large multinational corporations on their trucks to reduce the carbon emissions and everything. But they have no trucks on the road here in Pennsylvania, but they're like right over in the East End, and they've grown really organically and want to continue to add, you know, more people to their workforce. And so we're like, wow, we have a lot. We have a whole fleet of vehicles. So we brought our, you know, director of public works to their business to say, like, could this work, you know, for our trucks that we have? They both retrofit as well as, you know, modified trucks off of the production line. So, you know, we're kind of exploring that as a possibility, as a way to support a small local business, as well as really reduce our carbon footprint as a county.
Yeah, sounds like explore remains the word of the day. I want to ask you too, I just feel like one big thing that's on people's minds right now is property reassessments. We've talked a little bit about that on the show, including that your office just got sued by the city school district. I know you've said repeatedly that you support a countywide reassessment, but mm-hmm. you and Mayor Ganey would really like the state to order it. I just want to ask, though, y'all were both state legislators.
Yeah.
Why didn't you ask for it then?
So I think, you know, it just didn't come up, right? Like, you have this, the state touches so many different like issue areas, and you know, when there's not a fire burning, you're like, okay, like, my interest has always been housing. So I was working on housing policy. I was on the finance committee. So I was deep in the tax code. And you know, I just had my priorities, and no one ever really brought it to our attention of like, let's work on this together. Let's be collaborative. And, you know, now I think with the turnover in administration, and, you know, I think school districts getting to like the 12, 13 year point, that they're really being like, we actually need this to happen. And the surrounding counties around Allegheny County have recently gone through it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just a renewed sense of urgency. And
do y'all feel like there's a little bit of a fire burning right now?
I do. I think that there's a lot more attention being paid to it. I think that there's, you know, an opportunity to now start the conversation at the state in a meaningful way.
Do y'all feel like you have the partners you need in Harrisburg to have those conversations?
Yeah. Senator Fontana has recently, I don't know if he introduced the bill yet, but I know that he has maybe sent out like a Dear Colleagues memo on wanting to put a piece of legislation together, because, you know, Pennsylvania is now the only state that doesn't mandate regular reassessments.
Right.
We also had a friend in Delaware, but they passed a bill at the end of last year, and they're going through their countywide reassessments right now.
So as of right now, it's 2012 was the last time Allegheny County did it, mm-hmm. but there are counties in Pennsylvania that I understand it goes back to the 50s for some spaces that they still have not had reassessments.
Likely. I know that the counties surrounding Allegheny have recently gone through them in the last year or so. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can look at more modern technology and things like that. So I say, you know, I do feel a responsibility as someone who's leading the county that we do have tools and resources. So it's not something to just only punt to the state, but it's like, okay, let's have a state conversation, because we should be working at all levels of government. But in the meantime, you know, we're in data gathering mode and fact finding and looking at like, how does the system work? What's working? What isn't working? Who does a reassessment impact? How do we make sure we have certain policies in place so we can switch on if someone, you know, I think about my neighborhood of Lawrenceville, where property values have, you know, gone through the roof.
They have skyrocketed since 2012.
Yeah, absolutely. My home included, right? I bought my home in 2015. And so, you know, the folks who my neighbors who are, you know, she's in her 70s and she's lived there her entire life. Like, I want to make sure that she can stay in her home and things like that. So, you know, we have to make sure that we put those safety nets in place too. And ensure that people know about them and know how to access them. So, you know, we're not that a reassessment isn't resulting in any sort of displacement.
Yeah, so the tax bills aren't so high that mm-hmm. people just can't pay them and have to leave their homes.
Yeah, and I think what we also need to continue to repeat about reassessment is that we have anti-windfall clauses, which means yeah. that overall the millage rate needs, which is their tax rate, needs to be adjusted down so that the county essentially gets zero, you know, there's a zero change in revenue at the end of it.
The pie stays the same size.
Yes. Yes. And, but that does shift, right? Like it does shift, who pays what.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think that's something that we're seeing now is that some of that shifting is beginning with some of our big skyscrapers, for example, mm-hmm. are winning reassessments and or winning appeals to reassessments yeah. and paying a little bit less, which means that some of this burden may then fall yeah. on the taxpayer.
And what I heard a lot on the campaign trail was people who had recently purchased a home and they purchased the home and got the mortgage and got the escrow set up in a certain way. And then the school district came in and challenged that sale and the, you know, suddenly their millage rate stayed the same, their tax rate stayed the same, but now the value of their property was right. elevated so much. So they were, you know, getting slapped with these bills that they hadn't anticipated and, you know, could have gone into it clear eyed, but it's such an opaque system that they didn't know that that's what was going to happen to them. And so that's impacting, you know, families who are purchasing their home for the first time. It's
or if you're moving in from out of state, even just my parents, yep. for example, it took, and I didn't know to counsel them on this initially, that there are communities within Allegheny County that have higher tax rates. And yep. that's just something to yep. factor into the equation.
Exactly. And so it's often called the newcomer's tax.
Yes.
But I also talked to a couple, you know, older folks who were downsizing. So they were buying a smaller home and they were like, oh, wow, the same thing happened to them where they got challenged. And they were like, wow, this is now, I was making the fiscally responsible decision to downsize and ended up with a higher bill than I expected.
Yeah. I mean, what's your timeline for all of this? Because we're talking about it a lot right now. Mm-hmm. I feel like kind of in our news cycle, but reassessment and especially ordering something countywide takes yeah. a long time, I'm guessing.
It does. I mean, listen, I'm not going to rush into anything because we have to be deliberate in our approach to this because it hasn't happened in a long time. There's a lot of misinformation about it. People deserve to know what's going to happen to them and what the expectation is of them as far as registering for programs or, you know, filling out whatever forms. And it's, you know, oftentimes when you don't do something for 12 years and then you do it in one fell swoop, it's going to be expensive. So you yeah. have to raise money for that. So like I said, we're just kind of getting all that data so we can talk to the community about what's going to happen and what our approach is going to be. Because, you know, the worst thing we can do is blindside people.
Yeah.
And we're going to ensure that we do not do that.
Well, say the state orders it tomorrow. They absolutely won't, obviously. Yeah. But say they did. How long would it take for it to actually come to fruition?
Oh, I don't know.
So we'll all find out together?
I don't know, yeah.
Okay, cool.
I know that what has happened in the past is when they've mandated them through some sort of court case because an yeah. entity sued the county. You know, it was a very expensive process and it took many years. Thankfully, technology, I think, has made it a more streamlined process. But, you know, that's part of our fact-finding mission right now is okay. how much would it cost? How long would it take? What tools and technology exist that have not been deployed here in the past? And, you know, once we have our arms around that, then we can give a better estimate on what it takes.
Yeah. Well, before we go, of course, Pennsylvania's primary election is tomorrow. Polls are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. What are you going to be watching for?
Oh, wow. What am I going to be watching for? Well, as of this recording, we have 64,000 outstanding mail-in ballots.
That we are not allowed to count until election day.
Exactly. Exactly. Until 7 a.m. we can start opening the envelopes. And so I'm going to hope that all of those got returned before Tuesday, before 7 a.m. But, you know, a reminder that if you did, you can always go and spoil your ballot at your election site, your polling location.
You mean turn it in.
Yeah, turn it in. You hand it in. They'll give you another ballot. But yeah, I would just be looking for turnout. I think that we've seen mail-in ballots, the number requested match the last primary from 2020. What year is it? From 2022. The year is 2024, everyone. So the primary from 2022. So I'm interested to see if we have the same amount of turnout from the midterm and
typically
the last
it can be a little bit
year.
More yeah from a presidential year, but mm-hmm. this is also a presidential year with what I would generously call fewer choices.
Yes, absolutely. In the primary, absolutely. So I feel like it's been, I'm sure this doesn't feel like the reality for the candidates who are running, but for me it's just felt very quiet, and maybe that's because I'm not on the ballot this go around. So I'm hoping that people go out and vote. Because it's still important. You still have choice in local elections, and, you know, really you're voting for your, you know, state representatives, state senators, and, you know, folks on the federal ballot. So it's still important to go out and vote in your primaries.
County Executive, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
That's all for today here on CityCast Pittsburgh. If you're liking the show, please tell someone, rate us, leave us a nice review, and make sure you're subscribed to that Hey Pittsburgh newsletter. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Talk to you soon.
So I got to ride in the president's car from Sheets to the airport. Up until the point where it was all happening, where I was sitting across from him in the Secret Service car, riding from Sheets, that I was like, oh, wow, I never really thought about what I would talk about with the President of the United States if I was in this situation. So
you never thought about your Sheets order? With the
president? I didn't. I never thought about it.
So you did not get a turkey.
I didn't get a turkey sub. I'm a vegetarian, so normally my MTO is like, I might get an egg sandwich or, you know, get some fries or something. But like when you go into a Sheetz, you're not always looking your best. You know what I mean? Like you're either like, it's late at night and it's your only option, or you're on the road and you're like, you know, trying to get back in the car and like continue on your road trip. So it was a unique experience for sure.